while the cat's away, Julie Mayer's here with another Cat's Whiskers Spring Special.
Hello and a warm welcome to the final programme of the Cat's Whiskers Spring Specials. We'll be giving out the results of our competition later in the programme. We'll also be reading out your birthday greetings, and Michael Horden will be telling us the story of the Midas Touch with the BBC Concert Orchestra. Now, it's easy to imagine that these musicians in the orchestra just walk into the studio and start to play. But in fact, they have to spend many hours rehearsing and practicing, and most of them will have started playing musical instruments from a very early age, when they were young children. And as children, probably the only chance they had to play in an orchestra, if they were lucky, was at school. That's all changed now. With the founding of the National Children's Orchestra, it gives young talented musicians the chance to come together, practice together, and put on concerts. A few days ago, I went to Yorkshire to visit the second of the four orchestras, that's the under-13s, and found them rehearsing the London Suite. The sound of 100 young musicians, all under 13 years old, who have never played together before. To get into the orchestra, the musicians have to audition. 11-year-old Sophie Solomon told me what that was like.
You have to play two contrasting, well, short contrasting pieces of your own, which you've practiced, and then there's some sight reading, and some that you've been given about 10 minutes before that you can look through as well.
And those who pass the audition are invited to join one of the courses that take place in a boarding school in Acworth, Yorkshire, where the children stay for a week. On their arrival, there's an air of excitement whilst the children settle in.
Thank you very much. The first day you just sort of sign in, and then you have a rehearsal just to get to know everybody. And the next few days you're sort of meeting your sectional teacher and getting to know the pieces a bit more. And then the last few days, you're really working really hard to get it all ready for the concert.
Come back to your normal pitch trumpets. Hang on, come on.
Each section of the orchestra spends several hours a day rehearsing in separate rooms with a tutor. 11-year-old Christopher Laws is the only tuba player in the orchestra, and his instrument is almost as big as he is.
I chose the tuba because my sister was playing it, so she gave me the idea of it.
Is it a very difficult instrument to play?
No, not really, not in an orchestra, but you have to be able to count a lot.
How do you think you're going to feel when you play in front of an audience?
I'm very nervous.
Every orchestra has a leader, and traditionally, he or she is a violinist who sits at the front desk of the violin section. So to find out who the new leader would be, all the first violins had to play a piece in front of three tutors, who then announced that 11-year-old Jocelyn Wilson had been chosen.
It's a big challenge because everybody's following you in the first violins, and you've got to keep the pace and everything. If you come in late or something, then other people are going to come in late too. So you've really got to think and count.
Have you any ambitions?
Yes, I'd like to be a soloist in America when I get older and travel around the world with an orchestra.
I hope Jocelyn fulfills that ambition. Meanwhile, in another room, I found 11-year-old Lorette Pope with one of the most expensive instruments of all, the harp. Well, you have a very large and a very beautiful instrument. It is your own, isn't it?
Yes.
So how did you become involved with the harp?
Well, I used to live in Wales, and so I heard it a lot on TV, and I just liked the sound of it, so I started playing it.
How much does an instrument like this cost?
Well, the one I've got costs £7,800, but that's a full-size concert harp. The little ones cost about £700.
Would you like to play in a large orchestra when you're older?
Yes, and I'd quite like to be a professional harpist.
From one of the most expensive instruments to one of the smallest, 12-year-old David Cuthbert is a member of the wind section, and he plays his favourite instrument, the flute.
I've always wanted to play the flute, but first of all, my teacher wasn't too keen to take me since I was only 6.5 years old, but we persuaded her in the end.
How much of a part does the flute play in the orchestra?
It plays quite a lot because it's the highest reaching instrument in the orchestra. So if there's any solos, they usually go away up the top so they can be heard.
Most of these young musicians will go on to play in big orchestras or become soloists. But even if they don't take music up as a profession, the founder of the National Children's Orchestra, Vivian Price, believes that they gain in other ways.
There are numbers of them who go into other professions, but they've still got music to enjoy in their later life. We encourage them to come, whatever their sort of background, whether they can afford it or not. We have a bursary fund to help those who can't. So it's just a wonderful experience.
Well, I think it has a great benefit orchestrally. Also, it has a good value socially as well, because you're having to, if you haven't boarded before, you're having to share a room, and you're just seeing how you get on with each other, which is difficult sometimes.
It's great fun because you've all the different tunes coming together and making lovely harmonies.
So how do you feel at the end of the course?
Usually shattered.
And we wish the National Children's Orchestra lots of luck in the future. Sophie Solomon, the young violinist, will be back later in the programme to help me read out your birthday greetings. Time now for our story, and Michael Horden joins the BBC Concert Orchestra to tell us about the Midas Touch.
It was long ago, under the blue skies of ancient Greece, that Midas was born. In the cool shade of the olive trees, he lay fast asleep in his cradle. Trail of ants climbed up the side of the cradle. Each in turn dropped a grain of golden wheat in the baby's open mouth. Thank you. wise man said, "This is a wonder, a sign that Midas will be the richest king in the world." So Midas grew up and became king. He longed for riches and, above all, gold. He thought of nothing else and boasted to his courtiers of the wealth that was sure to be his one day. One morning, the gardeners found a fat old form, half man, half goat, lying under a rose bush, fuddled with wine, asleep and snoring. They shook him awake, bound him with garlands of flowers, and led him to Midas, their king. "Why, it's Silenus, my old friend," said Midas. "What are you doing here?" "I lost my way in the woods. My master, the god Dionysus, will wonder where I am. I must go back to him soon." But Midas would not hear of such a thing. He insisted on entertaining Silenus with music and dancing for 5 days and nights. The sixth day, Midas was quite ready to take Silenus back to his master. Dionysus was delighted to see his old friend again. "How can I reward you, Midas? What do you want most in all the world?" Midas seized his chance. "Gold! Gold!" "Gold? But a bag of gold is such a small reward for all the generosity you have shown. One bag? No, I mean that everything I touch may turn to gold." "Well, if you must, go then, and as you enter your palace gates, the golden touch will be yours." Midas set off without delay. Back in his garden, the greedy king lost no time in trying out this astonishing new power. Would it work? He broke a twig from an oak tree. It turned to gold. He picked up a stone, a clod of earth. A lump of gold in each hand, a fistful of ripe corn. Suddenly, nuggets worth a fortune. And the roses, he touched one. At once, the huge gold petals glistened in the sunshine. So the old prophecy was true. I shall indeed be the richest king in all the world. Midas ordered a feast to be set before him to celebrate the wealth that would now be his. But when his teeth tried to bite, the bread turned hard and cold, stiffer than a board, and the meat was a slice of metal in his mouth. He took a drink. As it touched his lips, it turned to liquid gold. In horror, he spat out the golden droplets. Everything Midas touched became the cold, hard metal he had so loved. How he hated what he had longed for. What had he done? What use was gold to him now? No food could satisfy his hunger. His dry throat burned with thirst. Forgive me, Father Dionysus. I was foolish, greedy. I didn't stop to think. Gods are kind, and Dionysus forgave him. Go to the river Pactolus. Follow it to its source high up in the mountains. Where the water leaps foaming from the rocks, plunge in and wash away your sin. Midas did as he was told. The golden touch left Midas at last and passed into the water. Even to this day, the fields and the sands of the river Pactolus are flecked with gold. Thank you. Midas was sick of gold. "I won't make a fool of myself like that again," he said. From now on, he spent much of his time in the woods and fields and worshipped the goat god, Pan, who played on a pipe cut from a reed. Pan lived in the caves near the great mountain, Tmolus. But even here, Midas made an ass of himself. "How well you play, Pan. After your music, even the great god Apollo with his lyre would sound dull and boring." Pan put down his pipe. His eyes twinkled wickedly. "You're right, Midas. My music is best. I'll challenge Apollo to a contest. And Tmolus, the god of the mountain here, shall be the judge." The old god, Tmolus, sat on the mountaintop and shook his ears clear of the trees. Pan played his pipe. Midas was enchanted. Said Tmolus. "Now let us hear you, Apollo." As he turned to face the great god of music, all the trees of the mountain turned too. On his head, Apollo wore a laurel wreath. His long purple cloak swept the ground. In his left hand, he held his lyre, inlaid with jewels and Indian ivory. With his right hand, he plucked the string. Deeply moved by the noble music, Tmolus gave his verdict. "Apollo is the winner." And the wind stirred in the mountain trees like the clapping of a million hands. "Rubbish!" shouted Midas. "Pan's the best." Stamping and shouting, he shook his fist. "Rubbish! Rubbish!" He made a ridiculous fuss. Apollo smiled. "Well, Midas, since you alone disagree that I am the winner, I shall give you a special prize myself." At once, Midas felt his ears begin to change shape. They became pointed at the top, grew longer, bristled with shaggy gray hair. Bitterly ashamed, Midas tried to hide his ears by wearing a purple turban. Only the barber, who cut his hair, discovered his secret. "I forbid you to speak of this," the king commanded. "You must not tell a soul. A soul, do you hear?" The barber nodded. But the secret so haunted him that he thought he would go mad if he bottled it up. So he ran to the riverbank, dug a hole near the water's edge, lay down, and whispered into the hole, "Midas has ass's ears. Midas has ass's ears." Then he got up, refilled the hole with earth, and stamped it down. He thought he had buried the shocking truth forever. But a thick clump of reeds sprang up, grew tall, swayed in the wind, and whispered the secret for all to hear. "Midas has ass's ears. Midas has ass's ears. Midas has ass's ears." For the rest of his days, Midas wore a turban and thought his secret was safely hidden. But the news was scattered everywhere. Even to this day, when the reeds sway in the wind, you can hear them whisper, "Midas has ass's ears. Midas has ass's ears. Midas has ass's ears. Midas has ass's ears."
Midas Touch was told by Michael Horden with the BBC Concert Orchestra. Now it's time to give out the results of last week's competition. We had three questions for you. What were the instruments in Peter and the Wolf that played Peter, the cat, and the wolf? Here's Sophie Solomon from the National Children's Orchestra.
The answers to last week's competition are: Peter was played by the strings, the cat was played by the clarinet, and the wolf was played by the horns.
And the three lucky winners out of the hat are Alex Brown of Cardiff, Rosanna Perry of Belfast, Northern Ireland, and Jessica Dook of East Sussex. And copies of An Eyewitness Guide to Music will be on their way to you very soon. Now Sophie's joined me again to help read out your birthday greetings.
Happy birthday!
Happy birthday to Gemma Zoltz, Colin Brooks, Barry Jones and Alison Lander.
Simon Gill, Ross Emmons, Caroline Horrocks and Owen Phipps.
Happy birthday to Jessica Wright, Holly Goldbourne, Rebecca Gray and Richard Swatman.
Edward Aykroyd, Anna Henry, Jonathan Wright and Prema Fisher.
Best wishes to Nicola McKinnon, Heather Davis, Lauren Griffiths and Lally Cox.
Emily Owen, Alice Tatart, Emma Tatart and Helen Dixon.
Happy birthday to Edward Kellett, Robert Preston, Fiona Banfield and Andrea Brooks.
Maud Locke, Simon Kay, Alice Garland and Sarah Covington.
Best wishes to Saul Taylor, Kelly Smith, Eleanor Scott and William Henderson.
Sarah Skite, Alistair Wilkinson, Claire Salt and Chloe Allington.
And finally, best wishes to Nicholas Clark, Sophie Hawkins, Kirsty Wilkinson and Jamie Pickup. Thank you, Sophie, and good luck to all the members of the National Children's Orchestra. If you're interested in joining the orchestra, write to us and we'll pass your letter on. The address is Cat's Whiskers, BBC, PO Box 40, Manchester M601FR. That's the last in the series of While the Cat's Away, I'm afraid. Andy Crane will be back next week with another series of Cat's Whiskers. I do hope you'll join him. From me, Julie Mayer, bye-bye.
And while the cat Cats Away was presented by Julie Mayer. In The Midas Touch, Michael Horden was accompanied by the BBC Concert Orchestra, conducted by Barry Wordsworth and led by Cynthia Bowes. The Midas Touch was produced by Brian Scott Hughes. The series is produced by Julia Brooke. Andy Crane returns with Cats Whiskers next week. The address to write to, if you didn't get it down, was Cats Whiskers, BBC, P.O. Box 40, Manchester, M601FR. Now on Radio 4, this week's edition of Bookshelf.